need to know how to get there, we'll be glad to tell you. And I hope you'll keep this bulletin and use it in your prayer life to pray for some of the people there who have requested prayers. Have y'all seen the Pope on television lately? He's all over the place. He's a first-class celebrity, I guess. And between the Pope and Donald Trump, is there anybody else on television anymore in the news? And I thought, well, okay, since it's a little fearsome when you see some of the things that are going on with the Pope, how he's becoming more political, more a part of civil society and government, not that he's running for office, but he has an expanded influence there. And also, I saw a picture of he and President Obama going into the White House, and whoever was narrating it said, here they are, the two most influential people in the world. And I thought, wow, things may be coming together fast. And I don't want to get into that too much, because we have in the past had a reputation for prophecy. And now I was baptized in 1965. And prophecy was a big attraction for people who came into the church. And some people have asked me to explain things in prophecy. I'm not real good at that. I kind of shy away from that a little bit, because if you go back that far, you'll see that some individuals, made a few miscalculations. Well, it's pretty plain, and we'll get to that we don't know when Christ is going to return. We don't know specifically how things are going to fall. We have a pretty good idea from what is in God's Word. So today I thought, combined with the Pope's visit, which has everybody's attention, and again, a very popular man, apparently a very humble man, and someone who's had a tremendous influence this past week, not only in the Catholic Church, but in the community at large. The government, he spoke yesterday before the United Nations, and drives around in his little Fiat. I think we all probably kind of think that's neat, that this man who is so powerful rides around in a Fiat and keeps a fairly simple lifestyle. Combining that with the reason we're here today and the things that we're doing this time of the year, I thought I'd take a look at prophecy, even though it's something I'm not real confident in. Again, 1965, we kind of figured that Christ would probably return in the mid-70s. Although every minister, people will dispute this with me, that I heard say anything like that usually prefaced it by saying, we're not setting dates, but. I remember one guy I used to go to church with, who was, I think, a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, said, well, you know they know, but they're just not telling us. And some people even theorize that maybe Christ wouldn't return in the mid-70s and that things would go on possibly into the 80s. That was, 30 years ago, the 80s generally, long time ago. And, of course, people have made predictions down through the years. I think it was 1834 when there was a large group that was told to expect Christ's return. They sold their property. They went to the top of a mountain to wait for him. And what do you know? He didn't show up. And we've, again, seen people take actions. I know at one time there were people in the church who thought they shouldn't have children because Christ was going to return imminently and the children wouldn't have a chance to grow up. We had a child back then. Well, we had three. But one right after we came into the church, and she is now almost 50, our little girl. Well, we've got another one who's 42 and a son who's 52. So anyway, they managed to survive up until this time. And we're making speculation. We speculated on going to the place of safety. Some of you may remember that. And I had a rather shocking experience with that one time. We used to have Bible study every other week on Wednesday. And we had it right next door to where we had services for Atonement and Feast of Trumpets, about a quarter mile from here in a theater. And so every other week, we had it 1 week. 2 weeks later, we had it. 2 weeks later, we drove down. the parking lot was empty. I thought, uh-oh. They've all gone to the place of safety. Nobody told us about it. We're probably just not worthy. The Otts were around then. The Esslingers were around then. And we thought, well, they're gone. You know, they're righteous. They were chosen to go. Found out it wasn't every other week. It was the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. And this happened to be a fifth Wednesday of the month. And we didn't think about that and went to Bible study. Nobody was there. But we used to worry about that. It seemed that going to a place of safety became more important to some people than serving God and serving other people and being in the kingdom. Not that it was, but it was up. It was a pretty high priority. And as some of you remember. So again, today I want to talk about prophecy, which is defined as, I looked it up in my Strong's Concordance, a discourse maintaining, emanating from divine inspiration and declaring the purpose of God, whether by reproving or admonishing the wicked, or comforting the afflicted, or revealing hidden things, especially foretelling the future, but not exclusively. Used in the New Testament of utterances of the prophets, you know, that's what's referred to as prophecy many times in the New Testament, of prediction of events relating to Christ's kingdom and speedy triumph, together with consolation and admonitions pertaining to it, the spirit of prophecy, the divine mind to which the prophetic faculty is due, of the endowment of speech of a Christian teacher called prophets, the gifts and utterances of prophets, especially the prediction of the works which, set apart to teach the gospel, will accomplish for the kingdom of Christ. So it's a little broader definition than we all usually think about. You know, we usually think prophecy is just foretelling the future. It's like having a crystal ball, something like that. But prophecy can be just a form of teaching. What can we not get from prophecy? What can we not get from prophecy? Well, one is exact dates. Matthew 24, which is the focal point of prophecy in the Bible. Matthew 24, verse 36, Jesus Christ says, "But of that day and hour knows no man, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only." We don't know. If I tell you I know, don't believe me. I don't think there will come a time. I think it's going to be, and we'll look at that later, when Christ returns, it's going to be a big surprise. And it's going to happen suddenly, and it's going to be unprecedented in what happens around it. In verse 44, it says, "Therefore, be you also ready." I'll tell you when he's going to return. Okay, I said I wouldn't. "In an hour when you think not." He's going to come when we don't think it's going to happen. And for us, it may be various times. I mean, as far as you're concerned, you may walk in front of a bus tomorrow and be killed. And that's it. The next thing you know, you'll be in Christ's kingdom, hopefully. And so at an hour in which we think not, the Son of Man comes. Turn to 1 Corinthians 13. This is the love chapter. Most of us, I think, refer to it as that. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 8. "Charity never fails." Charity meaning love. Love never fails. "Whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease." Has that ever happened? Well, yeah, there are a lot of languages that nobody speaks anymore. Nobody would recognize anymore. When I was in high school, I took Latin. I don't know why. I was a Protestant kid, and I was thinking, well, maybe the Catholics are right. And maybe, because we were taught that as Presbyterians, we weren't absolutely sure we were right, but the Catholics thought they were. So I thought, well, maybe they got something going there. And I think I had probably in the back of my mind thought, well, if I'm going to be a Catholic, maybe I'll try to be a priest, so I'll be sure to have it made. And then two things happened. First of all, I failed Latin. Second of all, have any of you seen the movie Picnic? Now, I learned about celibacy, what that meant. And I saw Kim Novak in Picnic. particularly in a scene that was filmed in Wichita where she was dancing down some stairs at a park. I lived in Wichita for 2 years, and I always wanted to make a pilgrimage, visit that park. I never did. But anyway, I saw Kim Novak in the movie. I realized what celibacy was. I realized that Catholic priests had to be celibate. I decided that wasn't for me. But anyway, I took Latin, and of course, nobody speaks Latin anymore, but if you were really good at it in high school, we had a Latin club. You could join the Latin club, and they'd get together, I don't know, once a week, once a month, and you, once you went into the room, you had to speak Latin. Well, nobody speaks Latin anymore, I don't think, but of course, there are a lot of languages that are derived from Latin, including our own, has a few Latin phrases in it, French, Spanish, Italian, Romanian. I think I'm leaving somebody out, but anyway, a lot of your European languages are derived from Latin. My wife took Latin, by the way, 2 years and got straight A's. I took it for 2 years, same course. I failed it the first time, barely passed it the second. She doesn't remember any of that stuff. She studied for her tests and passed her tests. I still remember a little Latin. We'll throw it at her every once in a while. But anyway, languages will fail. Tongues will cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. And we see that every once in a while. Someone will invent something. Of course, when you go back here, there were people who thought the world was flat. You know, and there people are still. There are groups that think the world is flat, and it's all a conspiracy for us to think that it's round. But that knowledge generally has faded away. But going back to prophecies, prophecies will fail. Our understanding of prophecies often fails. And we have tried to set dates and had a lot of talk about it and, you know, didn't think it seemed far-fetched to me in the 60s that things would go on clear into the 80s. But look at, here we are. It's, what year is it? 2015. So sometimes our understanding of prophecy fails. But my question today is, what can we get from prophecy? I mean, it's a big part of the Bible. What can we benefit from studying prophecy? What can we get from it? Well, one thing is, and this is probably an overall perspective, we can get God's long-term plan for the church, for Israel, for humanity as a whole. God's long-term plan. Prophecy can give us perspective. Matthew 24, again, I'll be bouncing back and forth to Matthew 24 because it's about prophecy. Matthew 24, 4, and Jesus answered, said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. Many will come in my name, saying I am the Christ, and shall deceive many. Well, that's already happened. That's been happening since probably shortly after this was spoken. And it goes on today. People who are deceiving others and are doing so in the name of Christ. For you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. Wars and rumors of wars. We see that now. But that's been the case for, I don't know, somebody did a survey and found that in the past 6,000 years, there have been 5 years where there was no war anywhere in the world. So that's a fact of life. See that you be not troubled. These things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Just because we see awful wars, just because we see things happening, just because we see deception on the part of religion, it doesn't mean Christ is going to come tomorrow. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. We see that. We've always seen that. I know one time, well, when the Joplin tornado happened, some of you are familiar with that. Of course, those of us here in the Ozarks lived a little closer to it. And 163 people died. And my wife got a call from a friend back in Pennsylvania who we knew. And she said, oh, I heard what happened to Joplin. It's got to be the end of the age. Well, that was awful what happened to Joplin, particularly if you were there. But look at Galveston, Texas in, I think, 1905, where thousands of people were killed in a hurricane there. Of course, the San Francisco earthquakes. We see these things. They happen. These are all the beginnings of sorrows. These things have happened. They will happen. They're happening now. They're the beginnings of sorrows. So we can get a little perspective and realize that, you know, some of these things that we worry a lot about and see the end of the age coming are not definite signs of the end of the age. Can you imagine if you were living 1,000 years ago? Not even 1,000 years ago, probably back in the 14th century, what you would have thought. What you would have thought had you looked around at the bubonic plague. How many of you have heard of that? Sometimes just referred to as the plague that covered the whole known world at that time. China, started in China apparently, moved into, across Asia into Europe. I don't think it affected the natives on the North American continent because there was no communication at that point or no interaction. But apparently 50 million people in Europe died of the plague. 50 million people. That was perhaps up to 60% of the population. How would you feel if you saw that? Would you think, well, this has got to be it. Can't get any worse than this. Well, that's pretty bad. You know, one writer said, you would eat lunch with friends and dinner with your ancestors in paradise. It struck that quickly and killed people that quickly, that was their perspective. You know, you could be eating lunch with somebody, and then for supper they'd be dining with their relatives in paradise. So it gives us a little perspective when we read these prophecies and read that these things are just always going to be and always have been. It's also a warning. Prophecy is a warning. Continuing on in verse 9, they shall deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And we've seen some of that, you know, martyrdoms down through the years. We're having breakfast with my granddaughter, my grandson this morning, and one of them got to talk about religion and talking about, I forgot what she said, but I said, you know, they're Christians. We can look at ISIS, we can look at Muslims, and there are those who will say, well, all Muslims are terrorists. Well, there have been some Christian terrorists, too. There was a group down in Arkansas that one of them murdered a state trooper. And they had a compound down there, and there was a standoff. And we remember the bombing in Oklahoma City, various other things. But, you know, these things happen. They will continue to happen. They've been happening for years. And some of us will be afflicted. Some of us will be martyred. And again, we look at the Inquisition. We look at the Inquisition back in the Middle Ages, where the Catholic Church martyred probably, perhaps millions, hundreds of thousands of people who failed to yield to it and to accept Catholicism. The poor Protestants. Well, then the poor Protestants in England, particularly, I'm sure there are other places, got power. And in England, they persecuted the Catholics. And some horrible things were done to Catholic priests who decided they didn't want to be part of the Church of England. So we see this going back and forth. Men shall be offended and betray one another and shall hate one another. Many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive a few people. No, shall deceive many. And because iniquity should abound, the love of many will wax cold. Now, we've seen that. We're seeing that. We see it in the church. People who have just lost their energy for following God, for doing what's right, they just fed up. It hasn't happened. You know, 1975 went by, the 80s went by, and we're still here. And we see people where their love has grown cold. Verse 21, for then shall be great tribulation as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Things are going to get worse. I remember standing with a deacon somewhere a few years ago, and we were musing on the end of the age, and he said, well, it better come soon. It can't get any worse than this. This was in the late 70s, I think. Oh, yes, it can. Oh, yes, it will. It will get worse than it's ever been. Read history. Look at the Inquisition. Look at the thing we were talking about earlier, the bubonic plague. Those are horrible things. Those are sad things. Look at some of the earthquakes and some of the other natural disasters that have killed people. It's going to get worse than that. Look at World War II. I'm a history buff, and so once in a while I'll find myself watching some history shows, particularly on World War II. And after watching some of those for several hours, or maybe several hours during the course of a week, at the end of the week I feel really bummed out to realize all the expense in lives, in money, and everything else that went into winning, and fortunately we did, winning World War I. World War II. World War I was pretty bad, too. So prophecy can be a warning. Turn to Daniel 12. Daniel 12 and verse 1. And at that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of your people. There shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And that time thy people shall be delivered, every one, as the book in the book that is found written in the book. So there is deliverance, but there's a time of trouble like has never happened before. We can't look around the world today and see that, because there's always been something worse that has already happened. I know the I wish I could find it. The new website, it's hard to find some of the old Beyond Today programs, but one that dealt with prophecy and had, I think, 7 prophetic signs that Christ is imminently going to return. And they had lines, maybe you remember seeing the graph. 2 of them had happened. 1 was happening, and I forgot what they were specifically, probably the ability to snuff out all human life. And then there were a number of things that hadn't happened yet. And we don't know when they're going to happen. But it was very, very clear at that time. So prophecy can be a warning for us. Things are going to get worse. They're going to get much worse. We can't sit around and say, well, couldn't be any worse than this. Some of us who maybe were around back in the 70s think, boy, wish it was like the 70s again. But we see all these things happening and all this, I think, brainwashing going on. My wife was watching The View. Maybe some of you are familiar with it. It's a ladies program on during the day, and there are 4 or 5 ladies on a panel that discuss current events. And initially, when it first came on the air, they would present these ladies and say, 4 ladies, 4 points of view. No, there wasn't. These ladies were all liberals, and they finally got some token I think in various generations of the show, token conservatives on there. But anyway, they were talking about abortion, and I kind of half heard it. And I came out and I said, "Which of these ladies, you know, abortion is, it's controversial. Not everybody's against it. Maybe 50-50. A lot of people are for it. A lot of people are dead set against it." Which of these 4 ladies, or I think there were 5 on the panel that day, are against it? Abortion. Well, I don't know. Well, I don't think any of them were. But they're depicted as typical people. Typical people with typical opinions. I remember seeing that same show. I guess I never sit down and watch the whole thing, but my wife does. It's a woman's show. But I'm usually home at the time, and I sometimes walk through it. But the day that the not the most recent Supreme Court decision, but one that favored homosexuality, and I think they debunked the whatever it was, the family, whatever, some family value thing, and Whoopi Goldberg came out, and first thing she said was, and they've, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled against the da-da-da-da-da, whatever it was back then. It was not the most recent decision, and everybody cheered. I said, where do they get these people in the audience? It's controversial. This is, and my wife says, well, that probably attracts a liberal audience. Maybe. I think they were prepped. If you've ever been to a live TV show, they have applause meters. I think they hit the applause meter. And if you saw Whoopi Goldberg, the way she presented it, well, you'd feel like you were dirt if you didn't agree with her. There was one guy who was sitting in the audience like this. I think that would have been me if I were there. But we see all this stuff happening. We see a slide to, and I'm not going to pit liberal against conservative. There are some conservative things that I'm not in favor of. There are some liberal things that maybe I'm in favor of. You know, I think we ought to be more responsible for the environment. By the way, the Pope agrees with me. But so I'm not a redneck, right-wing conservative, but I think there's a brainwashing situation going on here on television. I said, when's the last time you saw anybody in a sitcom or a TV drama that is against abortion depicted as a normal person? Usually it's a boob of some kind, some idiot who, you know, feels that way. And I think, of course, I'm in radio. I do radio news occasionally. I've been doing that for over 50 years, and radio is the only safe place to go listen to it. Well, radio, you hear the other extreme. You hear basically conservative people like Rush Limbaugh, if you're familiar with that name, and very few people are not. It goes off the other end sometimes, to where some of it is so out there that even Rush Limbaugh disagrees with it. But anyway, you have this on television particularly, this attempt to brainwash us and to make us believe that things are, well, things that we used to think were wrong are, well, they're really not. Well, they are. God says they're wrong, they're wrong. Let's turn to Matthew 24 again. And my point here is things are going to change suddenly. Things are going to change suddenly. And in verse 37 of Matthew 24, but in the days of Noah shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying, giving in marriage. Things were going along fine until the day that Noah entered the ark. It happened suddenly. It would be my belief they're going to happen suddenly again. How suddenly? What does suddenly mean? And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall the coming of the Son of Man be. This is going to happen suddenly. And again, it's going to be something worse than has ever happened in the history of mankind. Revelation 22 and verse 7. Revelation 22 and verse 7. Behold, I come quickly. Blessed is he that keeps the sayings of the prophecy of this book. Again, Revelation 22:7, behold, I come quickly. This is going to happen suddenly. Again, I don't know what suddenly means. Does it mean in a matter of hours, a matter of days, a matter of weeks, maybe over a period of a couple of years? I don't know. See, I'm not an expert on prophecy and don't claim to be. But I'm just trying to add some perspective to this. Things will change quickly. Things will change quickly. And in verse 12, he says, and behold, I come quickly. My reward is with me to give to every man according as his works shall be. So God is going to come quickly. Jesus Christ is going to return quickly. And there will be a great deal of confusion. Turn to Matthew 24 and verse 4. Matthew 24, 4. And Jesus answered and said, take heed that no man deceive you. Again, we read this earlier, I believe. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and shall confuse many. Verse 23. Then if a man say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. There shall arise false Christs, false prophets. They shall show great signs and wonders, miracles, insomuch that if it were possible, they would deceive the very elect. Satan is targeting us. He wants us to be deceived. The very elect. And therefore, you shall say, behold, he's in the desert, don't go forth. Behold, he's in the secret chambers, believe it not. There will be confusion. There was a guy he's probably still at it, who is predicting the rapture. I forgot how many times he predicted specific dates, specific times. But I guess I was the subject of a little fun on that. Shortly after I retired, I worked for a while as a tour guide at Fantastic Caverns. And I would work on Sundays. And one of those Sundays was the day he predicted the rapture would occur. And I got in my car, and for some reason, somebody was blocking my driveway or something. So I called in and said, look, I'm going to be a few minutes late. Okay. I talked to the manager. He didn't tell anybody else. That's all I felt I needed to do. And then I got there maybe a half hour late, and I went down, and there was a gal who ran the photo shop down there. She would take, if you've ever been to Fantastic Caverns, there's a point at which they take your picture. And she would do that. And she said, whew, I'm glad you're here. I thought you may have been taken in the rapture. I was kind of flattered that she thought I was that good, but anyway, we've seen that happen. I haven't seen the rapture, but we see people who continually predict these things, and they just don't happen. It's confusing. It's confusing. And again, my question would be, will we recognize the real thing when it happens? Because there will be great confusion. Christ's coming will be inescapable. It's not something that we're going to, I didn't know that happened last week. We'll know it's happening. Matthew 24, where we are, continuing on in verse 27. For as the lightning comes from the east and shines even to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Everybody's going to see it. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. So it's going to be, again, inescapable. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun shall be darkened. The moon will not give her light. The stars will fall from heaven. The powers of heaven will be shaken. It sounds pretty frightening and unavoidable. And then shall appear in the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall the tribes of the earth mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. Did we talk about trumpets recently? The great sound of a trumpet, and shall gather together the elect from the four winds from one end of heaven to the other. Wherever people are that are Christ's, he's going to gather them together. This event is going to be unavoidable, inescapable, something we can't avoid. The whole world can't avoid it. What can we get from prophecy? Another thing we can get from prophecy is instruction in doing the work. Instructions in doing the work. Matthew 24, we're there already. Go to verse 14. And the gospel of the kingdom, Matthew 24:14, shall be preached into all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. We're going to continue this work in whatever form, right up until the end. And, of course, the form of the work changes from time to time. I know when I came in, it was basically radio. You know, you had a handful of 50,000-watt radio stations, and I was in the Army at the time, and I was up all night, had my little transistor radio with me, and I could hear the world tomorrow at least three times every night. And, of course, then there was the Plain Truth magazine. Today, a lot of it's done over the Internet because 50,000-watt AM radio stations don't have many listeners anymore. FM radio stations basically would not want to carry a half-hour religious program. At least the ones with listeners wouldn't want that. But we reach people via the Internet, via television. So this work is going on. And if that failed, you and I might be, as one minister told my wife, the only light anybody ever sees. We lived in an apartment in Philadelphia, and we had some neighbors who were, I guess the polite word is swingers. They were wife swappers. And They never talked to me about it, but the woman talked to my wife about it. And my wife talked to the ministry about it. Of course, there was no doubt where we stood on it. But the question was, should we even be talking to these people? And he said, yes, you should. You may be the only light they ever see. And I think we can all take that personally. As we look at people around us and we look at our own conduct day to day in doing the work personally, one-on-one with people, you may be the only light they ever see. And I tell this story often because I think it's funny. There was a deacon in the church here who used to work in other parts of the state and on contract and worked somewhere else. And there was a guy up there he couldn't stand. You know, you go up there on Monday, probably work Monday through Friday up there, and these guys didn't get along at all. He couldn't stand this guy, and I don't know for what reason, but I don't know whether words were exchanged or he probably wasn't treating him like you would treat somebody you liked. Then he ran into him at the feast. So you never know who you're talking to. I thought, wouldn't it be nice if people who were in the church had a big green glow about them so you could spot them in the supermarket. But maybe others have had that experience of just running into people and, oh, he's in the church. Revelation 16 and verse 15. So we will be doing the work right up to the end. Some people thought when Mr. Armstrong died, the work ended. Well, it didn't. It goes on. Revelation 16:15. Behold, I come as a thief, and blessed is he that watches and keeps his garments, lest he be naked, and they see his shame. You know, again, we need to be at our best right up until the end. There's no such thing as Christian retirement. I tried physical retirement for a while. It just didn't work for me. But some people, they look forward to that, and some people have thought that, well, it's over. I'll just sit here. As one of my friends used to say, I'm going to sit in my rocking chair and wait for Christ to return. We got work to do. So prophecy gives us some instruction in doing the work. It also should give us a positive outlook, a positive outlook. You know, we should be the most positive, happy people on the face of the earth. Matthew 24:13. He that endures to the end, the same shall be saved. We need to endure to the end and keep on doing the work personally and as part of the church. Hebrews 3 and verse 6. Hebrews 3, 6. Hebrews 3, 6. Christ as a son over his own house, whose house are we. If we hold fast to the confidence and the rejoicing in his hope, firm unto the end. Are we rejoicing in what we're learning these days? Did you rejoice on the Day of Atonement? You know, I was hungry. I mentioned it in the sermon, and somebody as I came in said, did you have a good supper that night? Because I was counting the minutes. But we were rejoicing. What the Day of Atonement pictures is something to rejoice about, to be happy about. And hopefully we do have a positive outlook because of God's word and because of the words of his prophecy. Isaiah 11 and verse 9. Isaiah 11 and verse 9. If most of you know here, this is just one of my favorite scriptures, particularly this time of the year. And it's a section that's very positive, particularly if you like animals. My son used to like this section because he liked animals. He liked wild animals. He liked snakes. He liked big snakes. He now owns a boa constrictor, which will only grow as big as its environment will let it. So it's in a cage, or it's in a, what do you call it, a terrarium, and is only so big. But he liked that. But I like... getting down to verse 9, they shall not hurt or destroy in my holy mountain, for, and this is what I love when I stop and think about it, the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Can you imagine that? God's word, God's way being normal and inescapable, God's going to have his way. Revelation 21. Revelation 21, verses 1 through 7. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and the first heaven was and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. We can rejoice in that. You know, we rejoice in weddings. And I heard a voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them, and they shall be his people. And God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. You know, all those sorrows that we suffer. He's going to wipe away our tears. And there should be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain. The former things are passed away. So this is very encouraging. And he that sat upon the throne, behold, says, I'll make all things new. And he said to me, write these words, true and faithful. And he said unto me, it is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give you him that is athirst of the fountain of water of life freely. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Do you take a lot of courage in that? Does that make you feel good? This whole Holy Day season should make us feel really good. We should be not a bunch of grumpy old men or whatever, and sometimes we've been accused of that, because, you know, we can see what's wrong with this world. But we also can see what is coming and how much better that is going to be for the whole world, of course, for the church, for our families, and for us personally. I want to get real personal with this final scripture. In Matthew 25 and verse 34. Matthew 25, 34. And I want you to put yourself in this picture. You're coming face to face with Jesus Christ at the resurrection. You know, happy to be there. And then shall the king say to them on his right hand. They want to put your name there. Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I think once in a while we just need to get in there and read that over and over and over again as an encouragement as to what we have coming to us, what is going to be happening in the future to us personally, but of course not just to us, but eventually to the whole world, to all of humanity, everyone that's ever lived. So we can't get exact dates or an exact schedule of events for prophecy. But through studying it, we can get perspective. We can take a warning from what's in Scripture. We can see how total Christ's coming is going to be, how inescapable and undeniable it will be. And we can get instruction on doing the work. And prophecy, when we study it, I think God at some point is going to take us, maybe individually, and go through some of these prophecies when they've been fulfilled. And maybe he'll say to me, Fairwitz, or whatever he's going to call me. Hopefully it'll be something nice. But remember that prophecy that puzzled you? You thought it meant, now, look at history now. Look what's happened. That's what that prophecy is all about. And we'll all say, oh, yeah, now I see it. So hopefully we'll see that. But again, hopefully with all these things, we can look at prophecy today as a very encouraging thing, and can, in this season when we look at prophecy, we look at prophecy side events that are coming up, we can totally rejoice in the Feast of Tabernacles.